This is the Dirt Reporters podcast for the week of March 20th. I'm back after a couple week hiatus. I'm your host, D-Swab, Derek Kessinger, joined by the editorial staff of Kevin Kovac and Kyle McFadden. As you can see below me, Todd Turner is still on sabbatical. I think his is longer than 90 days, but I think he was okay, Kovac, after this past week, which arguably me and Rigsby were texting each other, and you were in the group text, so I guess it was us three. It was arguably the craziest 48 hours of controversy with the tires. A guy who won $1 million all of a sudden is leaving his Rocket One race team. You have rumors galore of who's going to be replacing him. You have rumors galore that other things might have happened that I don't even want to get into too much detail because they're so ridiculous. That's the way of the world we live in now in social media. You got influencers out there trying to break the story. And I didn't know where to begin, Kovac. That was just a crazy 48 to 72 hours of with the tire situation with Bobby Pierce, Kyle Bronson, and Devin Moran, which we recorded and it happened like an hour later. So we have to get a touch on it a little bit, but I don't even know where to begin. Where should we begin? Where do you feel like this was in your 48 hours of craziness in the dirt late model world? We've had crazy drama and controversy with Scott Blomquist at Eldora, but that only lasted 24 hours. This was 2 to 3 days of shenanigans.
Yeah, I mean, there's always been crazy stuff that happens in dirt late model racing, obviously. I mean, several times things have happened, big news in the middle of a season with the Rocket One team. I mean, you remember like Josh Richards having a medical issue and not racing that, what was that, 2014? And all of a sudden, I mean, that was a huge story. And at that point, Shepard.
Right Brandon before Shepard Summer Nationals. For him.
Yeah, well, that was even before that. It was actually early in the year. And in 2012, right? That was when Josh just went south. He had decided to go south and pursue the career down there. And
I thought Hector came in 2014 then.
Yes, yeah. Shepard came in 2012, and that was the year. And actually, perfect. That 2012 was Tim Fuller drove the car for the first weekend, if you remember right. Like he drove the car in some outlaw races in Alabama. It was in April of 2012. And then after that, he went to Mark Richards went to Brandon Shepard and decided to go. And that was a young Brandon Shepard at that point, too. He hadn't run a national tour yet. So they took him out on the, run the summer nationals and gave him experience running all over. That was definitely a different year. That was the only year that Rocket One hasn't been a regular for the entire season on a national tour. And in 2014 was the one where Josh had the medical issue, announced he's sitting out. And next thing you know, they got Brandon Shepard. I remember Brandon Shepard, went back home and left the ride like in April. And then that's when Rick Eckert came in and finished the year out with the Rocket One team. So, and then of course, last year, 2 years ago, when Brandon Shepard, right around Labor Day weekend, announced that he would be leaving at the end of the year. So, man, there's a lot of situations with this Rocket One that it's become the big news item of the year almost. When somebody leaves that ride or something changes, everybody's looking at it because it's the iconic ride. I mean, it's been there for so long, for 20 some years. There's been a Rocket House car out, and they've stood the test of time and been so successful, and that makes it everyone look at it when anything happens with that team, and that's what this was. I mean, man, oh my God, Hudson O'Neill leaves the car last week, right after all this stuff happened with the tire situation was announced. I mean, that was a big enough story on its own, and then less than a day later, that was blown off the headlines because of Hudson O'Neill leaving.
Right. So if you're like Kyle Bronson and Devin Moran, like you're like probably okay with this news breaking out because Bobby went more vocal, him and his mom, right. Angie had a nice long post. And then like those other two kind of took a back seat a little bit. They made little comments, but nothing too crazy. So all three of those, I guess, could say were all right. Okay. We're out of the mainstream spotlight, as you should say. But, that was kind of crazy. He wins $1 million last year. They win the Lucas Oil Championship. He wins the World 100 like 6+ months ago for the first time for Rocket One and Mark Richards and the first time for a driver in Indiana. It was crazy. Kyle, how did you keep what the real news? The real news was to what people were putting out on social media. It was a frenzy out there. And I know my phone was just going off the charts. I'm sure everybody's was, but it was pretty hectic when that leaking news came out about maybe Hudson O'Neill was going to leave Rocket One. I think it was on Wednesday morning or Wednesday afternoon, one of the two. Can't keep them straight anymore.
It's definitely like, you know, as I said on our like roundtable that was put out last week, it felt like an early April Fool's joke. You know, it's like the tire penalties and stuff, you know, like once those hit, I mean, even that was kind of hard to understand, I guess, right? In terms of not whether that was true or not, you know, because a lot of people have their own opinions on that. But it's just like, you know, when news like the Rocket One comes out with Hudson and, you know, that they're going to split or that something's coming or be ready for something to happen there, it's just like, oh my gosh, you know, it's like, it's, I think everybody's just kind of taken aback there and trying to understand, you know, what really went on. And you know, everybody's going to have rumors and their sources, quote unquote. And, you know, it's like, as Kovac knows too, it's like, you know, there's the story and then there's some people out there that who aren't us that want to try to make themselves the story by leveraging really what's going on through rumors and sources and this and that. And yeah, so trying to discern and pick apart what's true and what could be true and what's not. I mean, you know, that hasn't been new in the age of Twitter and, you know, social media, but when there's something, I guess, as complex and maybe personal as what went down last week, and as this continues to develop until Hudson O'Neill finds a ride for the rest of this year, I would imagine that he's going to, you know, people are still going to have rumors there with that too. So yeah, it's just, but I mean, we've been around long enough, or at least I've been around that long enough for, I mean, I've been a reporter for 8+ years when I count freelancing and like other sports and whatnot too. So when you're around it long enough, you can, you know who to trust and who ultimately not to trust. But yeah, I mean, it's still like looking back on it, I don't think reality will set in, you know, that Hudson O'Neill and Rocket One have split and that Tim McCready's in that car now too, moving forward until after this weekend. I think after this weekend, we can just get on to business once again and try to adjust ourselves here to the silly season, which is happening in March. I mean, who would have thought that? Probably nobody ever. So not me.
Kovac, we should just race all year, right? Because when we don't, we have a couple weeks off, everybody goes crazy. It was one of your funny comments you made to me. So T-Mac, he's officially in the ride. How's he going to do? Just a simple question. How is T-Mac going to do teaming up with Mark Richards? It's been several years since he's been in a Rocket race car. He obviously has a lot of history with Mark Richards, one of the Dirty Dozen guys. He came in a little bit later, but he ran the Outlaws right from the inception pretty much. So he's known Mark for a long, long time. How's these two seasoned veterans going to work out together? Because I think T-Mac's ready for maybe some resurgence here after a year and a half, if you ask him, just of kind of struggling and not up to T-Mac standards.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about how good Tim McCready still is. And I mean, he is going to turn 50 in less than a month, in April 12th, I believe. And that makes him the first driver. I think I said this on our other, a video we did last week. The first time that Mark Richards will have a driver that, you know, can't be his son. He's not the kid. The guy's not young enough to be his son since Rick Eckert drove for him, you know, that 2014. So that immediately makes a different dynamic, like working with the team, you know, working between the two, you know, like talking and what are they going to do and about what happens on the racetrack. And Tim McCree's seen it all, done it all. He doesn't have to get like that that guidance that you'd usually, you know, that Markle would give to the younger drivers like a Hudson who's still learning, and even Brandon Shepherd when he got in that car, you know, over those years, every year he learned more, obviously, but he was still a young driver, not that doesn't have that those years that McCready has. So that's going to be a weirder thing, which but when I talked to Tim McCready on Sunday, he is pumped. Let's just say that he's pumped up. Mark Richards actually sent him like right after they got the deal done and got together. And Mark Richards is a big Nick Saban guy. You know, he loves the how Nick Saban, if anybody doesn't know, that's the Alabama football, ex-Alabama football coach, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that. Thank you.
Just making sure everybody listen, make sure that they know. I know Billy Franklin, if he's listening, he would know that, right, Derek? So
Anthony but, Burroughs probably would too.
Exactly, right. So and he's a big – and actually Nick Saban is – he grew up maybe 20 minutes from Mark in West Virginia, which is a pretty neat you know, little note too. So that was his hometown there, West Virginia. And Mark likes just like the inspirational things that the quotes and stuff that Nick Saban always has and thinks about and tells his team. And Mark sent some like a 5-point thing about like, how do you strive for excellence? He sent that over. He texted it over to McCready right after they were, you know, that had gotten everything together. And he said that McCready sent right back. Said, I'm pumped now after reading this. And I asked McCready that too. And he also said that too. He's like, yeah, he did get me pumped up. And, you know, and it's a point now where at the career, like Timmy, he knows that he's closer to the end of his career than the beginning, obviously. And he hasn't been with many different teams in his career. You think about his late model career. He started with Sweeteners Plus team from New York, him and Vic Coffey. Basically from 2002 was his first ever race, 2003 dabbled, 2004 is his first full-time late model year, all the way up through 2020 when he went to the Paylor Motorsports team. That's a long time with one team. And then he went to three teams. This will be his third team that he's with full-time. So he's a guy that doesn't jump around. And that's something to say too. And I think that he likes to think that this is like that little something different towards the end of his career that might just give him that little extra oomph to get some more years out of it, some more success. And heck, he's followed that. He's like raced with that number one car a long time. And, you know, now he gets to drive it.
Did how hard do you think it was for him, really quick, Kovac, of leaving Paylor to go to this? I mean, it is a ride of a lifetime. We've seen Brandon Shepherd had his own thing, so it's a lot easier. We saw Hudson O'Neill make that jump after having a good race team. Donald Bradshear and his beautiful wife have, you know, given T-Mac a couple championships and really believed in him. I'm sure it was probably tough for him to leave.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, that was the first thing that he said he had to go talk to them when Mark – you know, approached him with that. They were testing there last week. You know, they were out there to test on Wednesday. He had driven down south. They were planning to run the Hunt the Front race in Talladega this past weekend. So that changed their plans very quickly. But, you know, it had been since 2020 that they had won two championships in a row. I mean, they've won some big stuff, you know, and it helped. And Donald and Gina brought McCready from like that struggle. You know, he didn't have that backing, the resources that he had in the past just with his race team, with the Sweeteners Plus team up there from New York. You know, that had kind of fallen. You remember the one year he won the World 100, he didn't even have a big trailer anymore. He went that whole year pretty much with that, you know, smaller trailer. He had to, you know, the one-car hauler with right. A dually. So Bradshear's gave him the resources to get back up on top, to not have to – be, you know, just struggling to get to each race, and that made it tough for him to leave. And but there was this year he won a race at Alltech back in during Speedweeks, but he'd struggled a little bit. You know, he's ninth in points. Everything wasn't clicking 100%, and that was, you know, certainly he's not going to leave that ride if everything was going perfectly. If they were like on that championship caliber that they'd been, not that they're not a championship caliber team, I mean, but that they were not at the top of their game. And, you know, they had been struggling a little bit. And so that made it a little bit like, hey, I can do this. I hate to leave you guys, but they're positive to, and he said, maybe this is good for them too. This is going to give them the chance to bring Carson. Because he knows Carson Ferguson was probably going to be next in line behind him when he would be done. And now maybe accelerates Carson Ferguson a little bit, you know, with the Bradshires.
Okay, Kyle McFadden, T-Mac is down 90 points from fourth place to Dalton Wilson. It's one of the best, you know, teams, arguably, at the Rocket one. I feel bad, though, for Joel Kovac. He's going to be the youngest one now in the trailer. You mean,
back to the young.
Back to the old days. But they're still in a prime position. You know, 90 points out. If they're going to make this move, at least for T-Mac side of thing, the time was now, because now their focus and goal is, let's just get to that top four. Obviously, Rocket One's always main motto is, let's burn that thing down and win some races. But for bigger picture things, for another Lucas Oil Championship for Mark Richards and them, they're right in striking distance. Might take some time for them to get their feet wet, but I don't know, that car's pretty good, and T-Mac's a pretty good damn driver, and he can adapt pretty well.
Yeah, it's looking at the standings. I mean, technically, yeah, he's ninth, but Brandon Shepherd, who I would have to imagine now he's going to stick it back out on the Outlaw Tour. He's leading those points after Bobby Pierce's penalties. So, you know, he's fifth on the Lucas Series. So, and then Jimmy Owens, who's currently seventh, you know, he had tweeted on Tuesday that the drive for five continues this weekend. So you add in, you know, that wrinkle too going into this this weekend, and I mean, only 90 points, that's really nothing, you know, for these next 5 months until the cutoff is determined. So yeah, it's like, I think, like, you know, there's two ways that you can look at it. Like, oh, Tim McCready and Mark Richards, they're so competitive that the fit won't be, people could say that maybe this isn't going to be a successful pairing, but then there's the side that I'm taking, and also Kovac's taking too, and I'm sure you are also, Suave, and that's like, you know, because they're so similar and because they're so competitive and because they see eye to eye and they're cut from the same cloth, so to speak, that I don't really think Mark Richards could have really asked for a better replacement at this, you know, time of year for the situation and the circumstances that were at hand. I mean, if you think about it, like, not to get too far into hypotheticals, but say, like, okay, say if Tim McCready had been back on that championship trajectory, you know, with that Paler team, you know, what would he reconsider that decision? Maybe. So then who would Mark have to go to if it wasn't
Kevin Weaver?
Right. So it's just, but I mean, all the situations and like the circumstances have pointed to this happening. I think everything happens for a reason. And, you know, for Tim McCready's case, he's, if he can drive the car like he did at Alltech that night, I was there for it. I mean, he certainly has a lot left in the tank. Let's all agree with that. And so I think he's going to be right back in the championship mix. It's going to be fun. Now the question is, can Hudson O'Neill stay in that top four? We'll have to find out. All depends on who he's going to be driving for, which we don't know yet.
Kovac, I think the Rocket One and T-Mac had a really good marketing opportunity. I know you're not a big fan of this basketball player, but Michael Jordan, when he returned from retirement in the mid-90s, just had a fax that said, "I'm back." Like, I thought that had been a good little marketing thing. Like, just send it out with a little fax and said, "I'm back." But really quick before we go on to the other topic of, you know, the tire thing and maybe some penalties that are maybe a little strict, that's my opinion. How does Mark coach up, give him tips to a 50-year-old that's been doing it for a long time in every genre of dirt cars, from midgets to big blocks to sprint cars, I'm sure. Like, how do you coach that? Or is it just like, when the Vikings got Brett Favre, you just let him go slinging and let him go do his work? I mean, I don't know. Mark hasn't done this in a while for a guy that's been doing it for a long time since Eckert.
Yeah, well, let's be frank here. Mark wants his drivers to give it their all. He wants them to burn it to the ground. You know, I think he told. I mean, Rick Eckert made a comment one time back when he drove for him that when he pulled into the pits, he was like, I think it was overheating or something like. And Mark was like, "What are you doing back in there? What happened? You know, what are you doing in here?" And he goes, "Oh, I was like overheating or something." And Mark's like, "That, you know, the Rocket One car, we're not pulling in unless it's on a wrecker, you know, like, I mean, we're staying out there, you know, just that's what I want my drivers to do." And that's how serious he is about winning. And a lot of that is, I mean, you look at his drivers now, he likes guys that can get up there on that cushion, Bishop, Hudson, you know, Josh Richards was 100% of, you know, a cushion pounder too. And will a 50-year-old Tim McCready, will he get up there and push it? Will he go up? He used to be called, he's been called Topside Timmy, right? I've seen him win a lot of races on the cushion. And it's, Timmy doesn't want to go up there on the cushion all the time. It's not like he can't, though. I mean, you saw him at Alltech back in during Speed Weeks when he won that race. That was an unruly track. You had to run that thing hard up on the top. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what he did. And he won that race. And Mark Richards even said he saw that. He knows that Timmy can still do that. He can get up there when he has to. And Tim told me, he's like, I'm not going to go up there. I'm smart enough now, though. I'm not going to go up there and burn the cushion down for ninth place. That's not smart. You know, not smart racing. But if that cushion is there and that's what needs to be done to win a race, Tim has total confidence in himself that he could still do it. And I believe it. I mean, you could see that he's not a, you know, an out of shape 50 years old here. You know, I mean, he's still, I mean, I think a lot of people probably don't even realize he's 50. I mean, he's always kind of seemed younger because
Slim Shady.
And yeah, right. When he came into late model racing, he was already almost 30 years old, you know? So he's not seen as like, you know, as one of the veterans, I think sometimes when you think about it, but he could definitely do it. And we will see him winning some races on top. You know, he's going to show, I think, that it isn't just for the young guys to be able to run like that. He won't run like that all the time. He's not going to run it so hard up there that he's going to be pounding that right rear quarter panel off all the time in the deck, but he'll do it when he has to. And he's a pretty versatile racer.
Yeah. He's, one of the best to ever do it in terms of just getting any vehicle and putting on a show. I've seen him.
Thing too. I mean, I forgot to even mention though about Rocket chassis too. Timmy's never driven a Rocket XR1 car. You know, he started off his career. Yeah, it's all the old, you know, the blue front ends, all that stuff, you know, and because he stopped running Rockets and he went to the Warrior House car, you know, that early 2010s. And then I think he had 1 year that he ran a Rocket again before going to Longhorn. So it's been he has since that XR1 has come out, he's never run one. He's never even practiced one. I thought he might have like tested one, you know, maybe one of booms or something sometimes, but he hasn't. So that's a change, you know, he'll have to get used to that. But I think he's pretty capable.
Hudson O'Neill's out. Still going to figure out what his future holds. There's some rumors going around who he's going to be racing for this weekend. I don't know if we really want to say it on here. I mean, I haven't been confirmed, so I'm not going to say anything about that, but be very interesting to see what Huddy does the rest of the year. Then he had people posting like a Masters built yellow 71 like his dad had. So you're like, oh, wait, it's back. And they're like, well, that picture is like 10 years old. So don't believe all the stuff you see on the internet and social media. But the other big news, I don't think we're going to give the details of what we think of them doing it or not. But, you know, last week suspensions came down on Kyle Bronson, Bobby Pierce, and Devin Moran. Of course, all of them said they didn't do it. That's what we get a lot of times in these tire situations. You can believe them you can believe them or not believe them. Just one of those unfortunate circumstances. But I'm here right now to tell you guys, Kevin Kovac and Kyle McFadden, I just think the fans are losing out on it. The series is definitely losing out on it. And the drivers are losing out on it. Like, I just think that the punishments are so hard, especially for a first-time offense. Now, if you have two in a year, I understand that. But if you went, like, 6 or 7 years and nothing's happened and something came up, I don't know. I just think it ruins the series for that little bit of that time being when he's suspended. Because right now, Bobby Pierce, he can't win the World of Outlaw Championships. And obviously, if you're Brian Carter, you're not just going on a witch hunt to get Bobby Pierce not coming to your races. But that's just what the rule is in place. I'm here to defend Kovac. That rule, I think, is just too harsh. Give him a fine. Take away the points of the event that happened. But I think that first-time offense is a little harsh. And there's just so many different scenarios and stuff that goes into tire testing as well that maybe we don't have it fully complete of making sure it's 100% effective. I don't know. Your thoughts on that? I think it just puts a black eye on our sport when you have star drivers that can't go to a race. People have been promoting it, like, say, Farmer City or other tracks have been promoting Bobby Pierce will be here, and then he's not going to be there because he's suspended for a thing that happened back in February. Sorry, there was my rant.
Well, Brian Carter said that. He even used the term black eye for the sport, that these suspensions. And it's tough. I mean, it's tough for the series to go do that. They really have to feel like, man, this is happening. You know, this is something that we believe that testing was correct, because we're getting rid of our, I mean, when that test comes back and all those officials from the World Racing Group see these three guys failed, and one of them is our number one guy, our reigning champion, their hearts are going to be going like, oh my God. I mean, like, you almost would feel like the thing that they would want to do is not even say anything. Oh, let's just sweep it under the rug. You don't want to let these, I mean, why do we want to lose our main guy? But you have to have an honesty there, you know, like, if you're going to do the test, you have to follow through on it, and you have to give them the penalties. You know, you have to, that's what you're going by. That's what happened, you know. But I would agree with you that the suspension part of it is just, that just feels like it's tough for me. It's, you remember back in like 2016, like when all those guys, when the five guys, you know, Blomqvist and Jimmy Owens and
your boy Bloomer
Ricky Jr. Yeah. Like there's five guys were involved with that back there and Shepard, you know, back at the Dream at Eldora. That was a 3-month penalty back then, you know, right? I mean, it was 3 months that from World Racing Group events.
90 days.
That takes. Yeah. So, I mean, and that was in the summer.
And when Jason Fager got it, it was 90 days, right?
Yeah, it was 90 days. It was a long suspension. So even if you, like, weren't running a series, you know, like if you weren't a guy that was running the World of Outlaws, you still missed some races probably that you probably would have gone to. You know, you would have won Fairbury or USA Nationals or something. This, now it's only 30 days. I mean, it is less of a suspension. 30
gotten
days
better.
World Racing Group races. That's better. But, I mean, it doesn't – it only affects one guy of those three. Effectively here. I mean, because right now there's really no races that Devin Moran and Kyle Bronson would go to in that 30-day span. I mean, technically, I guess it's already over the 30-day span because it happened on February. What theirs was on the 12th,
16th or 12th. Yeah, they're free.
Well, they were the dirt car series. They were in a dirt car sanction race. The Bobby Pierce was February 16th in an outlaw race. So they put another penalty basically on top of that to make sure that an outlaw race was involved. So four outlaw races, even if he would have gotten through 30 days here without missing an outlaw race, you know, through the World Racing Group, you know, affiliated that time frame, you know, he would have gotten through 30 days because this weekend's races, the next outlaw races are already canceled. Or postponed from in Tennessee. So there wouldn't even have been an outlaw race in 30 days for his penalty, but they added four outlaw races to that. So he has to sit out four races.
Well, hopefully you don't get rained out until the Prairie Dirt, Kovac.
Yeah, I mean, it could go. How could it go, you know, right? So it just feels like, man, that guy has Kyle Bronson is supposed to run the World of Outlaws. He moved up a spot in the points because of Bobby Pierce losing his points in an outlaw race. So he's not going to miss any outlaw races now. So yeah, they got good fines. They got a penalty, but Moran and Bronson don't, the punishment doesn't fit the crime that Bobby Pierce is getting. It's that kind of like it's kind of unfortunate because, you know, you don't want to see drivers have to have their entire season messed up. I mean, if it was true here that they say that they didn't do it, but if they did it, you know, you can't really feel sorry if you're like, hey, you got caught. But still, it's I don't like the way it's kind of unequal punishment, because if everyone was running the World of Outlaws, you know, like you punish a guy in a NASCAR Cup Series for suspension, everyone's kind of under the same umbrella there, because that's all, they're not running right anywhere else, you know. But here, one guy's running a Lucas Oil Series, one guy's running the World of Outlaws, right, so the punishments aren't going to be the same.
And if you're running like a regional series, Lucas or Outlaws are in your neck of the woods, especially like in the Southeast, because they don't have like a lot of sanctioning bodies. You just go, and if you got caught, they're like, okay, I can go race the next week in a, you know, Carolina Clash race. Right. That doesn't matter anymore. But I don't know, Kyle, I'm sure you've talked to a lot of different drivers. They probably have their take on the whole situation of what a suspension should and shouldn't be. Jason Fager had a huge Facebook post about it, live video of what his thoughts were. Of course, you know, he got caught back in, I believe 2013, Illini 100.
Yep,
so
2013,
just over a decade now, and that, you know, he's been very much a big advocate of the whole situation, because he still, you know, says that he didn't do anything, and he thinks that there should be a better process of the whole situation. But what's your just overall thoughts of, like, the punishment, how they do the whole situation, and how they collect the samples and stuff like that? Because I'm sure you talked to several drivers here in the last, you know, 8 days.
I have. I actually saw Devin Moran on Saturday at Pittsburgh Motor Speedway for the UL MS opener, and asked him, hey, man, do you have any comments from this past week? And he smiled and said, no, thank you. So he, you know, these, I understand it, right, from both ends. From, if I'm in Brian Carter's shoes, and the ones who are officiating this, if a tire sample comes up negative, you have to hand down some kind of penalty, right? And if I'm a driver, you know, knowing that my tires are going to get tested, if I was a driver, if I had a race team, right, like, would I go out and dope my tires and put my whole, like, reputation on the line? And no, like, I wouldn't. So, but, like, then again, you know, why? So who's in the right and who's in the wrong? Nobody really knows. I mean, I feel like we have more questions than answers. And but when we're talking about penalties and the ramifications of all that, in the midst of who's right, who's wrong, you know, where does this fall? I just think also, yeah, it's way too harsh to basically send a driver's season packing because one tire test comes up negative. I mean, just dock them points and have them pay some kind of fine, at least $10,000, I would have to say, and allow them to continue forth with your series. I don't understand the whole, you have to sit out for 30 days or four races. I get, like, I'm all for, like, a probation period. Like, maybe a driver's on probation for 30, 60, 90 days, and if another tire test comes up, then okay, absolutely. You know, they should get suspended for a certain period of time, but not once. That just seems too harsh, especially, like, I said this last week too, like, I know next to nothing of just a little bit about, you know, how teams try to, you know, not, I don't want to say bend the rules, but every team, you'd be lying if you're not trying to find the line, right? It's racing. It's always been that way. But, like, I just find it hard to believe, like, if a guy comes, like, if his tires are only, like, if you only fail one tire test on one instance, and they've already raced like 20 times this year, if you're really trying to gain some kind of competitive advantage, wouldn't you fail multiple tests? That's just me. So, but that goes back to what we're talking about here too. It's way too harsh to send a guy packing and basically take him out of a championship hunt based off of one bad tire test. And I mean, just to put it in perspective here, like, Bobby Pierce's 294-point penalty, I mean, that's massive, because I mean, he topped Chris Madden last year by 112 points to win the runaway or to win the championship in runaway fashion. And then Brandon Shepherd was 256 behind Bobby last year. So, I mean, just to put that in perspective there. So, I mean, maybe if Bobby can race the Outlaws or is allowed back even after the penalty, like say the suspension's off the table, I mean, he may not even want to come back after the penalty or after the points penalty. So there's multiple different ways that you can put it, but we can all agree that it's too harsh, I think.
Yeah, it's just like we said, it takes a damper in the sports. I think the fans are the biggest losers of it behind the drivers and series. But, yeah, the fans got to be, you know, they have their say in it. And it's just, I don't know, it's a bad deal. Kovac, I called you the day this happened. I'm like, surely you have something in your archives. Like, just use the same story for, like, when there's a tire scandal. You just have to switch the quotes around because – we have the same thing every single time from when that 2016 incident, when all those guys got caught, they all had said the same thing. You know, these three guys are all saying the same thing. It's just like we're beating a dead horse on these whole situations because it kind of reminds me of the steroid era with like Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, like how they just denied. You had people going at him saying, yes, you did, you cheated and stuff like that. It gets exhausting on our end, and I'm sure I can't even imagine how the series and drivers feel, how exhausting it is and how you have to defend yourself. And I guess, I don't know, when, like, do you believe every single one of them all year is doing it, Kovac, or you kind of have a suspicion of what you just hear in the pit area, or what, like, how do you go about it? I was just curious.
There's always like people saying, oh, this guy, yeah, there, people are doing it, you know, and it's, but when you hear the guys that were penalized, you know, when they talk, they sound damn convincing that they didn't, you know, like they sound like, I mean, they're pretty good, you know, pretty good at not telling the truth then, you know, if they didn't do it. I mean, are they so confident that like that they didn't, they maybe did they do something and they just feel like they really did it. They have it in their head that they're not really doing anything because everyone else is doing it. Cause you always hear that, I mean, everyone else is doing it, you know, like, well, they have to do it or something, but it is, I hate when they have to do these tire things. You know, it stunk back when Jason Fegger got, you know, penalized 10 years or 11 years ago, and in the situation there at the Dream and in 2016. There was the year back at the World a few years, you know, 2017 I believe it was, right, with Chris Madden. He was losses. He failed a tire test after that, but he still, I mean. Bobby Pierce probably looked back at this one and been like, you know, Madden never lost anything. He still finished, you know, second in the points that year. His wasn't an outlaw race, it was a dirt car race, but his suspension went for 30 days. So it would have been from like, you know, the World 100 until October, which there was like three outlaw races in there. He got to run those three outlaw races because they said the outlaws said that it was under review, like when his during that part of his suspension. And so, and then the review ended after those three races. So he never lost anything. You know, Bobby Pierce could probably be like, how about if I put mine under review now too, for all those years, you know, for several races and, you know, and come back. And I mean, it's not exactly the same again, because it wasn't in an outlaw race that Madden's happened. So he was not subject to this extra four race outlaw thing that Bobby is. But man, it's like it's just there's never any concrete thing here, because it's such like a little, because nobody's in that chemistry lab with everybody. It's not a weird thing. It's not like they're taking an engine and, you know, and here's the part that's messed up, you know, it's illegal, or here's this shock that's illegal. You could look at it, everyone could see it. This is chemistry, which, you know, like where everyone else is, everyone's not chemists. Everybody who says like also that the lab that the outlaws and dirt car uses, they don't do as well as the Lucas Oil lab or whatever. They're, you know, I mean, that, how do they, I mean, I don't even know how people know that either. I mean, it's us, you know, it's, they're not, everyone's not chemists. So it's just talk almost. And so it's just a situation that you hate. I hate it every time it pops up, and But the thing is, it keeps coming up. And Brian Carter did say, like, I think Kyle, we were like just kind of mentioning, you know, messaging back and forth. And, you know, back at Volusia, you know, Brian Carter, he had said that they were going to be harder. They were going to be stringent on these tire tests this year, and you know, gave everybody warning. So you could say, you know, that they're going to go with that. You know, hey, we warned people, and these things came up, you know, so we're going to stick with it. So. But hopefully more of that doesn't happen. Right, Derek? We don't need any more of this to happen.
No, we don't need any more. So put all you drivers out there, take out your undetectable sauce and put it back in back in the cabinet for wait a few years if you have to. Just follow Jim Moon's famous rule. 6, you're fine. 7, you're going to get caught. You know, I think that was the old thing back in the day. But, yeah, it was a crazy whirlwind of a week of just drama, controversy, fake news, real news, it was just shenanigans. It was crazy. And I don't think I'll ever forget this week that happened in dirt late mile racing. There's been a lot that I've been a part of, but that was at the racetrack. This was just 72 hours of no racing, of just stuff constantly going over. It kind of felt like the NFL in the off season, where all this, you know, Aaron Rodgers is inside a hole and he comes out, and then you have like some other guy just doing some, you know, just weird and crazy, absurd things. So, yeah, we're just going to have to move forward like we always do and have some good, clean racing, which we have some this weekend as of now, this recording of stuff going on. So, yeah, we'll just wait and see. Just hopefully none of this happens for a while. I know Kovac and Kyle McFadden, the rest of us in the media world, were not sleeping too much there the last week trying to get the notes or seeing if Mark Richards was going to text one of us and let us know who the driver was going to be. So it's Tim McCready, obviously. So one more thing. I want to go first. I want to give a shout-out to James Essex with the Northern All-Stars. I know he tapped in it a little bit last year at Brownstown, I think, for one race. They got a series going this year. But as a guy from Illinois, when the Northern All-Stars came into Fairbury, the original Northern All-Stars, like the one that James ran, he'd have Steve Barnett, Don O'Neill would come race over at Fairbury. And then that was like a time other than Summer Nationals or the Prairie Dirt Classic where you would get some, you know, regional bigger guys coming to Fairbury on just like a regular weekend in August. So the logo suite, that's one of my favorite shirts I have in the closet. The Northern All-Stars I'll wear during the Prairie Dirt Classic week. But yeah, they had a good weekend there. The highest car count in several years there at the Spring 50 at Florence Speedway. So shout out to James Essex working hard to bring back the Indiana-based series that he once ran back in the 90s and early 2000s. So I thought that was pretty cool that he revitalized that series. It was a good series, and I think it's going to be a good one in that region that desperately needs some big paint events. Kyle McFadden, how about you?
Shout out to Jared, Michael Norris. For picking up the win at
the announcer
PTMS this past weekend. Yeah, right. Mike Norris, not Mike Norris at Fairbury, but Michael Norris, the race car driver out of
Sarver. I love Michael Norris, the racer.
Yeah, he's awesome. Right. Both of them are, you know, dirt late model diehards. And so, but no, he picked up the win this past weekend driving for Todd Sorenza in that number 02 machine. He's back with that team this year. Had raced for them from 2019 through 2000 and 2021. And so he's back with them and putting together his schedule for this year and also bringing back his family number 72 car too. So some more racing there for Michael Norris and kicked off his year with the big win over Max Blair at PPMS. So we have a story on Dirt on Dirt, so make sure to go read that if you can.
Awesome. I like it. Michael Norris, one of the good people in the sport. Him and his dad have worked their butts off. He's got some Summer Nationals wins, and seeing him in that 02 car brings back some memories, like you said, of the, you know, the early 2020s, which I can't believe was already 4 years ago. Kevin Kovac, how about you?
I want to mention, Ben Watkins, the South Carolina driver, won the Carolina Clash race at Lancaster. That's Lancaster. I'm saying Lancaster. That's the way it says around. It's said around here in Pennsylvania, but Lancaster Motor Speedway down there in South Carolina. That was his fourth straight win in that track's Red Rose Rumble, and his seventh straight win in a super late model over the last, 3 years or 2 years at Lancaster. I mean, it's a track now where, like, if you go there, Ben Watkins is, you pencil him in not even pencil him in, magic marker him in there, Sharpie him in as the winner, because man, he's pretty much unbeatable there now. Seven straight wins. He has something going on at Lancaster. He would love to see some big races and more big races at that racetrack, because he's figured that place out really well.
Yeah, Kovac, and not to mention the good car counts we saw all across the country. You had 29 at PPMS, you had 40 at Talladega, you had good car count, highest car count the spring 50 in a while, so also 40 down at the comp game. So a lot of good, healthy racing there in March. Some of those guys in race Florida, but I think we need racing, Kovac, because when we don't, a lot of crazy, a lot of drama, and a lot of things happen. So everybody keep calm out there as racing picks up this weekend. Lucas Oil action, as the time of recording, is at Atomic and Brownstown. Keep your browsers locked in to dirtondirt.com and Flow Racing. You can watch a lot of great coverage every lap of plenty of events there at Flow. And be sure to check out these guys' stories. They've been working their booties off, making sure everything was correct, making sure all the storylines and drama was figured out. So good job, guys. Look at their stories. Until next week, this is the Dirt Reporters. Thank you for watching.